Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elby.
And I'm Don Gagne, sitting in for Ken Rudin this week.
I should point out that Ken is in Boise, Idaho, doing some work for the State Impact Project. And one of his editors there at State Impact sends us this information, which we have via Twitter. And it is that when they were last night being served in a restaurant somewhere in Boise, one of the people serving them said, "You know what? You sound like that guy who does Political Junkie on NPR."
That made Ken's week.
I think it may have made his month.
I think so.
I think, you know, for more details, you know, see Ken's Twitter account. An exhaustive account is there in 142 characters.
It was not the listener, though, because they'd have referenced It's All Politics.
Correct. Correct. So we're still searching for the listener in Boise, as well as elsewhere, of course. And one thing I just have to bring up immediately, Don, because you've spent so much time following this campaign and particularly following the Republican candidates, the strategy by which, as we speak, Mitt Romney, as we record this podcast, Mitt Romney is going into Lorain, Ohio, the county Lorain, to Elyria, I believe is the actual town that that Barack Obama spoke in yesterday, to follow up, to give a Mitt rebuttal, if you will, to what the president had to say there yesterday.
It's not a shadow candidacy. It's a shadowing candidacy. The Romney campaign describes it as their bracketing strategy. And this week he has been, or his representatives, in one case, his bus, has been going places where President Obama either is about to go, has just gone, or in the case of Charlotte, North Carolina, where the president will deliver his acceptance speech for the at the Democratic National Convention in September. So Mitt Romney gave a pre-buttle speech many months early.
I have to say that the Romney campaign seems to be very much on top of the schedule. I'm very much on top of the calendar. Next week, the president is going to Colorado and Iowa and again to North Carolina. And perhaps we could look to see the Republican nominee showing up in all of those states next week.
It's a little bit gimmicky. But is a gimmick like this okay as long as you don't overdo it, as long as you don't just kind of seem like, you know, we're waiting to see where he goes to decide where we go? You need to do something to get attention at this point, right, now that the nomination is effectively sewn up.
That's right. And it's an automatic, really, because the cable television folks, where, as we know, a very large proportion of the voters are getting a lot of their information, if not most of their information, about this campaign at this point, cable television news, they're going to love the natural sort of debate rubric of this. The format looks like a thrust and parry between the two candidates in similar backdrops, and you can even leave a crew in place for the next day when Mitt Romney shows up. So it has a certain natural appeal, so long as the events that you do in those towns, you know, draw a pretty good crowd and are well organized, and so you don't have a poor contrast in that respect.
And in the case of both candidates, both campaigns, they seem to be cooperating with that kind of faux debate structure by offering up sound bites that just neatly pair against one another. In, was it in Ohio? President Obama made reference to not having grown up with a silver spoon in his mouth. Michelle not having grown up, Michelle is how he referred to her, the first lady, with a silver spoon in her mouth. So it tees it up for Mitt Romney the next morning to be outraged that the president is somehow criticizing his father and him. Again, it's the Mitt Romney, "I'm not going to apologize. In this case, I'm not going to apologize for being wealthy and being successful." And then he always reminds people, "My dad started out poor." George Romney, of course, who went on to become an auto executive and governor of Michigan when I was a kid there.
You could say that this is all coming out of the highly successful energy that the Romney campaign got from the Hillary Rosen dust-up the previous week, when Hillary Rosen, who is a CNN contributor and a sometime Democratic strategist, said on CNN that Ann Romney had never worked a day in her life. This is a reference to her affluence, but also to her working in the home as opposed to having a career outside the home and not having had to have worked to support her sons. And that, of course, started a firestorm, and the Republicans jumped on it and said that the Democrats didn't honor the work of mothers in the home and so on, and we had all of that back and forth. David Axelrod this week, when being interviewed on CNN and questioned about this, said, "Look, Hillary Rosen isn't our employee. She doesn't work for the Obama campaign or the White House. She works for CNN. So if she should be explained by somebody, it would be more CNN than the White House people. But, of course, that horse has left the barn. The issue was joined in a way that was highly inimical to the interests of the administration, trying to cast the Republicans as warring on women, when suddenly the women of the country were divided into a discussion between people who worked only in the home and people who had a job outside the home as well.
It's like no battle is too small.
Exactly. No battle too small to be joined. And also, I think if there's a grander strategy in all of this, they're trying to deflect what they see as a serious problem for the Romney campaign, in that his wealth and his multiple houses, that sort of talk that was okay to some degree during the primaries, is going to be a big feature of the fall campaign. The Obama people are planning to hit that real hard. And so they're trying to push that away, deflect it, perhaps even make it off limits by fighting some of these smaller struggles and winning them, and thereby making that far less an effective weapon for the president to use in the fall.
One thing that I found interesting is how the Romney campaign in this particular phase is working on two tracks. There are events where he's clearly speaking to all Americans and talking about President Obama in terms of, listen, he's a likable guy. He's just done a poor job. He has a great family, but you may admire him in this regard. But there's this over here. So we really can't afford four more years of it. But the other side of it is the shoring up of the base. He's going to deliver the commencement address for graduation ceremonies at Jerry Falwell's Liberty University in Southwest Virginia. Certainly not a part of Virginia he needs to worry about. But again, it shores up the base. I saw him this week at a Tea Party gathering, a Tea Party convention in Greater Philadelphia. I was actually in Philadelphia, right at the Franklin Institute, the giant statue, marble Ben Franklin, looming over the proceedings, always seeming to look away, though.
Looking away from the proceedings, yes.
Kind of stone-faced, you know? But what I found there was a Tea Party group ready and willing to embrace Mitt Romney as the nominee.
I got on board about a month ago because he's going to be our nominee, and it's important that we win in November. Originally, I was Michelle Bachmann's supporter, and me personally, it's enough that he's not Obama.
I liked Herman Cain, then he went by the wayside. I think he got a raw deal. I like Santorum because he has very good family values, and I think that's what we're missing. And Romney also does, but I just wasn't really clear when he ran those few years back. I know that he has money and he has great family values and he's a businessman. I love all that. But I want to make sure that he knows how the middle class is really toting the line.
Look, I'm going to go vote for him, but does he want us to mobilize our ground troops? We have Tea Party people all over the place who are not very enthusiastic. At this point, the only thing he can possibly do is who he picks for a VP, who's going to be his people that he's going to work with going forward.
Again, those people were all at this Tea Party event at the Franklin Institute in Philly. We heard from Jim Zinkowicz, he's a letter carrier, Meg Schaefer, who works in business management, and Bill Miller, who works in construction, he said, all Tea Party members.
And it was Bill Miller who brought up the issue of the vice presidential choice, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But I think it's important to note at this juncture that whatever else you want to say about the Romney campaign and the difficulties that they had securing the Republican nomination and the difficulties they may have enthusing the Tea Party base, whatever other issues you want to bring up, Hispanics, women voters, and so on, the Romney campaign does not look so bad when you look at the Gallup poll, when you look at the New York Times poll, the Pew Research Center poll. All of them have shown the race tightening up. And in the Gallup case, the Gallup daily tracking poll, Mitt Romney is actually ahead of the president by a couple of percentage points. Now, that may be a statistical tie. We're still in April. It's a long way to November. But the president had a pretty good lead, high single digits, even double digits in a couple of polls not too long ago when Mitt Romney was still struggling with Rick Santorum and some of the other Republican candidates. Now this has essentially consolidated as a Republican-Democratic race. That makes it a pretty even Steven kind of contest. And it appears that whatever his problems and whatever his travails, Mitt Romney is awfully well situated to make this a competitive race running against an incumbent president.
And these voters in particular, I've been to so many Tea Party events over the last year or so, and you ask them who they're going to vote for, Mitt Romney was the least likely name to come up. It's not that it never came up, but I heard lots of Herman Cain's, lots of Michelle Bachmann's, lots of Rick Santorum's, lots of Newt Gingrich's. But if you found somebody who mentioned Romney at an event, I mean, that was really an unusual thing. The question, though, again, is enthusiasm. You suspect they'll vote and not vote for a third party. But will they, as Bill Miller says there, work the phones, go door to door, and take advantage of that energy that the Tea Party has been known for?
Now, the great question that everyone's going to debate now for the next several weeks, is this because Mitt Romney is the right candidate for the Republican Party, even though it was taking medicine for some of them? Is this proof, because he has moved into a statistical tie or even ahead, is this proof that Mitt Romney was the right candidate for them to consolidate behind? Or is it simply, as we have seen in some evidence, the aversion that so many voters have to Barack Obama and the president's administration? Let's consider, as Mitt Romney tries to follow the president around the country and deliver, you know, this rebuttal that he is prepared to give, is it also the dogging of this administration of all the bad news that they've had? We've had the weak jobs report that came out in April following two good job reports in February and March. We've also had the GSA scandal, which may not involve an enormous amount of money when you consider the size of the federal government, but is so inexplicable and so inexcusable and gives people such a tangible sense of what wasteful government spending looks like.
And any portrayal of that looks bad for the president, because he's seen as the big government guy in the race.
That's right. And Mitt Romney can say, I know how to run a business and I know how to get rid of this kind of junk when it happens. The Secret Service, another case of an almost never examined part of the federal government, much like the General Services Administration. People ignore the GSA because it's dull and doesn't make a lot of headlines. But the Secret Service gets very little scrutiny because, well, it's the Secret Service, and it seems to be extremely competent, and it has had pretty good press over the years and lots of adulatory movies and lots of attention paid to the sacrifices of their agents and so forth. So all of that is pretty positive. And then the news out of Afghanistan continues to be bad with the awful photos of U.S. troops posing with body parts of the dead. All of this reflects badly on the president in a week of political volatility.
And in Afghanistan, we're in a place where Republicans, now a majority, oppose that war. And Mitt Romney isn't there yet. He doesn't seem to be in sync with the base on that particular issue. But he is trying to exploit that war as the war that President Obama, as soon as he took office, said he was going to pour resources into, and it's the war that had been neglected. And as much as anything in this administration, it does feel like President Obama owns the Afghanistan war.
This administration oftentimes talks about how much it inherited, and in truth, they did. But the problem is, particularly with respect to the debt, or particularly with respect to Afghanistan, that their policies have only made those problems more persistent in the minds of many voters. Certainly when you look at Afghanistan, they had this big reevaluation in 2009 in the fall, and they decided to double down on the commitment. They could have pulled back from that, much as they did from Iraq. They went the other way. And at that point, it becomes incredibly difficult for Barack Obama to distance himself from Afghanistan.
So we have these big things out there that are just tough, tough news stories that make people feel not very good. And there is the president in the middle of it all, whether it's his doing or not.
You know, the trajectory of the Romney campaign has been an extraordinary one to watch, and you've been there watching it all along. Perhaps the other most dramatic trajectory that we've seen since the end of last year is essentially the downward trajectory of Newt Gingrich, who in December could sit there on a national television program and say, I will be the nominee, and not sound absurd saying it, and seem to be the person to beat in Iowa and New Hampshire and a succession of other states, and now be reduced to the point, well, where his campaign has become something of an object of humor. For example, this week he went to visit the zoo. He has a lot of interest in zoos, and he went to a zoo in St. Louis and got to see these Magellanic, I believe they're called, penguins, a rare kind of penguin, and one of them promptly bit him. on the finger.
It bit him. And we only know that because he showed one of the reporters who trail him everywhere, one reporter, his finger. With a Band-Aid on it.
Because the penguin bit him.
And he explained that a penguin had bit him. And, you know, if there's ever a sign that maybe you should have gotten out of the race a week ago, it's the day the penguin bites you.
Well, you know, usually when a guy stays in the race this long, and this has certainly been said about Rick Santorum, if not about Ron Paul, there has to be some other reason you're sticking. And one thought oftentimes is you're negotiating some kind of a shortlist deal to possibly be the vice presidential candidate. But I don't hear anybody speculating that about Newt Gingrich.
No, no. And the other reason someone stays in is to promote their brand. And maybe it's brand Ron Paul and all he stands for, or brand Dennis Kucinich and all he stands for. And your loyal followers are thrilled to have you still out there, even though any hope is long past. But Newt Gingrich seems to have damaged the brand in terms of all of his outside enterprises and the like. So only Newt can tell us why he's still in it at this point and what the end game is for him.
Okay, so, and there's not much possibility of him being on that vice presidential list, but there's a tremendous amount of interest in who might be on that vice presidential list. It seems to be the game of the week, so we thought we would play a little version of it here on It's All Politics.
You know, I feel my voice is not adequate to speak over such a
come on. Let your inner out.
So, Ron, the rules are simple. And to those of you playing at home, what we're going to do is play a clip from a potential vice presidential nominee, a potential running mate to Mitt Romney, and see if you can guess who it is. You ready to play?
Yes, we're ready to play, Don.
Here's the first one.
It's just something I'm not even considering right now. I'm so focused on my job in Congress. If I wanted to be president or vice president so badly, I would have run for president.
Do you know who that is?
That's Paul Ryan.
That's an easy one.
That's kind of easy. He's right off the top. He has a very particular way of talking.
Okay, let's try another one.
I don't think there's anybody in America who would, you know, necessarily think my personality is best suited to being number two.
That's Chris Christie.
All right. Do they get harder? Let's try this one.
I'm happy where I am. I just got elected to the Senate. I think I can help him a lot here. We've got a lot to get done. Tax reform and the budget deficit.
Big giveaway there. I just got elected to the Senate. That's Rob Portman.
Of Ohio. Next.
I would not accept the vice presidential nomination. You know, I will tell you that it is very important for me that the people believe in their government. Secondly, there's a lot of great vice presidential candidates. You don't need a one-year governor as vice president.
You know, there just aren't that many women on the list. We've got 2 1-year governors on the list of potential VPs here, and that's the one from South Carolina, Nikki Haley.
It is indeed. And so 4 for 4. Let's throw one more at you.
You know, I was sitting in the desert of Kandahar, Afghanistan, and now I'm here talking with you. But, you know, I am always willing and ready to serve my country in whatever capacity that the American people would desire.
Let's note that that's the one person who's ready if called.
I was sitting in the desert in Kandahar. It's certainly not David Petraeus.
Aww. His name was tossed into the ring by another prominent person, Sarah Palin. When she was asked.
Oh, and this would be Alan West. And I should recognize Alan West's voice. But yes, he was sitting in a desert in the War on Terror not too long ago before he, shall we say, exited the Army. And there was an incident that was in reaction to. Alan West is now an outspoken congressman from Florida who in recent days has said that he believes that the members of the Progressive Caucus in the House of Representatives are communists.
And this is a partial list, but do we have one more, a bonus round?
Hi, I'm Selina Meyer, the Vice President of the United States of America. Politics is about people, and I'm passionate about people as well as about politics. To bring people closer to politics and politics to the people, I've created this website so you, the people, can see what we, the politics people, or politicians, do.
This has got to be Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
We don't usually plug upcoming HBO miniseries on our show, but she plays the vice president, and perhaps she's offering us a vision of a vice president we'll never see.
All right. Among the many people who have been mentioned for vice president but didn't make our little game show, Marco Rubio, in many people's mind, the leading candidate, the senator from Florida, a Tea Party favorite and Hispanic. And from Florida, what's not to like?
Our short list was just that. It was not all-inclusive, but certainly he's one of those names talked about probably more frequently than any other name. I happened to see him at an event Thursday morning in D.C., and he said, if asked, I will say no. Major Garrett from the National Journal kept prodding him. What, you're not qualified enough? It's not saying that, but we just have a pool of many candidates. But then he went on, and a little bit of a Freudian slip. This is part of his denial that he would even entertain the job.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years from now, if I do a good job as vice president, I'm sorry.
You guys all got that, right?
As a senator?
You all got that, right?
If I do a good job as a senator instead of a vice president, I'll have a chance to do all sorts of things, including commissioner of the NFL, which is where the real power is, you know.
Well, you know, every once in a while, you know, we've had a lot of hot mic controversies lately. In this case, I'm quite certain Senator Rubio knew the mic was on, and it was more a, as you suggested, Freudian slip.
An interesting little moment. So I think we probably keep him on the list.
And let me ask you a question, Don. What are the circumstances under which the Democratic vice presidential nomination might be in question? Vice President Joe Biden seems to be very happy in his job, but there are those who feel that President Obama, if he really wants to get the women's vote and solidify that vote, ought to pull a switch and have his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, become his running mate and have Joe Biden become Secretary of State.
It has resurfaced again this week after not having been talked about for, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks.
How many percentage points would Barack Obama need to be behind in that Gallup daily tracking poll for him to pull that switch?
It just feels like it would be seen as a desperation move. Would there be sympathy for Joe Biden? I mean, he'd have to get a pretty plum job in exchange, like perhaps Secretary of State.
And would be open under the circumstances.
It would be open. Doesn't it just feel like the thing that we're now talking about, now that we know the contested open convention isn't going to happen for sure?
We need something. We need something that would be a big shakeup, a big game change. And right now we talk about the vice president on the Republican side, and it's very hard to let go of the Clinton controversy, which has been such a good friend to journalists through the last 20 years. And who knows, possibly in one way or another, it will continue for another 10 or 20.
I'm ready to entertain the discussion about her plans for 2016. I don't quite feel like the door is as closed as she has hinted that it is, that she just wants to retire and relax for a little bit after a long stretch of really grueling hard work.
But I suppose that would be the game change movie for 2012. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Don Gagne.
Join us again next week when Ken Rudin will be back for It's All Politics from NPR.
I don't go for fancy clothes.
No.
For diamond rings or movie stars.
No.
I go for penguin. Throw your money out the door. Just sit around and watch it snow.
Let it snow. Let it snow.
I go for penguin. Oh Lord, I go for penguin. Penguins are so sensitive. Penguins are so sensitive. Penguins are so sensitive to my needs.